Why is it important for urban communities or people who live in cities to understand the critical need for us to coexist with nature?
There's just nature all around us.
Yes.
You don't have to watch TV programs to see nature. Yes. You can see it around us, but most of it goes unaware. Traditionally, conservation has tended to focus on national parks and these, yes, areas where you get, you know, a lot of very impressive wildlife and impressive nature. But most people don't live in nature reserves.
Hello everyone, my name is Grace and I'm the host of Raving Eco-Sustainability, my perspective podcast, where we talk about everything climate change, climate solutions and environmental sustainability and conservation. Today I am pleased to be joined by Jerry Tizier, an ecologist from the UK. He has been doing some work here in Kampala, and it's basically known as the Kampala Buzzline. He's going to delve more into it, and as we talk about everything sustainability and conservation, and we are going to be talking about transforming communities through urban environmental conservation. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, yes, very much for having me.
Yes. Now, Jerry, I only know that you're an ecologist. That's where I stop. But you can share with our viewers and our listeners who is Jerry and basically what does this ecologist title entail and your work really?
Well, I like to title myself as a community ecologist because, yes, as you said just now, I work in the community. And I'm working on a project. I founded a project called the Hackney Buzzline, which is a 4 kilometer pollinator corridor in an area of London, in East London, that links 4 parks through 3 social housing estates. And in London is a fairly green city. Around half of London is actually made up of green space or blue space. But in between, and a lot of that is made up of parks, and in between the parks, it is very built up. So the Hackney Buzzline, it links up these 4 parks. All of the parks are local sites of importance for nature conservation.
Yes.
They're actually quite good for nature. And the social housing estates are areas of relative social deprivation. So they're areas where people rent their houses off the local authority.
Yes, now I get it that it's Hackney Buzzline, and we are also here in Kampala. You've come up with one for Kampala Buzzline. Why Buzzline? Because even me, I'm quite curious, why Buzzline? Basically, why did you zero in on the name Buzzline?
Well, we're creating a pollinator corridor,
yes,
and the most important pollinators, certainly in England, are bees,
yes,
and bees buzz. So that's where the name Buzzline comes from.
Yes.
But it's actually not just bees. We're also creating habitats for butterflies and other insects that are less well known that pollinate as well, such as hoverflies.
Yes. Now, for someone watching us out there, they would want to know, simple terms, what are pollinators really?
Pollinators are insects that go from flower to flower, and they go to the flowers in search of nectar and pollen, which they use to feed on, or in the case of bees, to provision nests for their larvae. And as they search for pollen and nectar, they go to the flowers.
Yes.
They carry the pollen that the flowers produce to other flowers, and that is needed to fertilize the other flowers. So without that process of pollination,
yes,
certainly in the natural world, we would have no flowers,
yes,
we would have no fruit. It's even said that if bees disappeared from the world, then we'd have, as humans, we'd have only 4 years left to live.
Yes. Now, how important and why is it important for urban communities or people who live in cities to understand the critical need for us to coexist with nature, to coexist with the natural habitats?
Yes, urban conservation is a relatively new field.
Yes.
Traditionally, conservation has tended to focus on national parks and these,
yes,
areas where you get, you know, a lot of very impressive wildlife and impressive nature. But most people don't live in nature reserves or in national parks. They live in cities.
Yes.
And very, it's not so well known that there's just nature all around us.
Yes.
You don't have to watch TV programs to see nature. Yes. You can see it around us, but most of it goes unaware.
Yes.
And cities, although there's a loss of nature in cities to a large extent, they can actually also be havens, certainly for pollinators. So bees, for example, there can be more bees and more species of bees in cities than you get in the surrounding countryside.
Yes. Yes. Now, when we come to cities, we notice that there are quite a number of critical players within the ecosystem of the cities. Other than the communities that live within the cities, we also have the policymakers. We also have the people who are tourists who come in once in a while. How easy has it been in your experience in London to bring all these people on one table to understand the common good and the common cause to ensure that green spaces can coexist with people as well?
Yeah, it's a really important point. In the UK, local authorities now have a legal duty to establish nature recovery plans. So that's true for Hackney, as it is for a lot of other areas and authorities in the UK. The problem that local authorities have is that while they might own and manage these parks, they don't own and manage the land in between them,
yes.
Which and the landowners and the people working in these areas. It may be schools, it may be housing associations, it may be private residents. And in order to achieve effective nature recovery, everybody knows that has to be done on a landscape scale. You need to be able to provide sufficient habitat across a large area in order for populations to survive. So the challenge that authorities face is, how do you actually engage your community, your other stakeholders, as I said, which might well be schools or housing associations? How do you engage them in nature recovery? And what the Hackney Buzzline does, it provides a model, a way of doing that. The Hackney Buzzline is really embedded in the community.
Yes.
I've been working in my local community, yes, for the last 10 years. And a similar principle applies to the Kampala Buzzline as well, yes, is that it's set up, it's come about from, yes, that firm rootedness, I suppose you'd describe it, in the community.
Yes. Now that you've come at the Kampala Buzzline, how did this idea come about? How did it transform from the fact that, did you leverage from the successes of the Hackney Buzzline to implement the Kampala Buzzline? What was really the thought and the whole idea behind the Kampala Buzzline?
Yeah, let me say straight away that it's not me implementing the Kampala Buzzline.
Yes.
It's the Marafiki, yes, United Green Youths Initiative.
Yes.
I was doing social media work around the Hackney Buzzline.
Yes.
And Hannington Sawanga from Marafiki contacted me. We made contact through,
yes, yes,
yes, through X, as it used to be called, Twitter.
Yes.
And Hannington set up an X space chat.
Yes.
So we had a chat about our respective experiences.
Yes.
And it was interesting to see what the similarities are and what the differences are between the two contexts.
Yes.
And then following on from that, Hannington said that he wanted to set up a Kampala Buzzline, and that Kampala Buzzline was launched last week.
Yes.
And I've come over here to help launch that.
Yes. Now, how unique is the Kampala Buzzline from the Hackney Buzzline back in London? Are there any differences? And I'm asking this from the point of view that a buzzline is definitely going to be tailor-made to the ecological characteristics of the particular area that it is in. So how unique is the Kampala Buzzline from the Hackney Buzzline back in London?
Yes, the principles are the same.
Yes.
And the principles of the Buzzline are to link these bigger green areas through the more built-up areas, and to do that by planting and creating habitats for pollinators every 100 to 200 metres along the Buzzline.
Okay.
So you're getting a kind of line of pollinator havens or pollinator stations, which means that pollinators can move from the bigger green areas, kind of hop between the two
between the areas.
That. And so that is the same in London and Kampala and in cities around the world. There are, of course, certain differences. One of the challenges that the Kampala buzz line faces and planting out on the streets is that the goats, free-ranging goats, come along and eat the plants.
Yes.
Now, we don't have free-ranging goats in London, so we haven't got that problem. But in terms of the central principle, that is pretty much the same.
Yes. Now, this may seem a bit obvious, but if someone is setting up a buzz line, what do they need? Because I see from the Kampala buzz line, there was pitching from the National Forestry Authority that I think provided the trees. So other than that, what else would someone, do you need like a particular environment or a particular setup to set up a buzz line really? Is a buzz line even set up?
I think it's really important to have that community engagement and to be embedded within the community because the buzz lines are being created by the community, with the community, for the community.
Yes.
So I think that's, I'd say that was a prerequisite to our model. But as you say, it's very important to form those partnerships and those collaborations with other stakeholders, with the other authorities. In the UK, we have conservation organisations as well that I've linked up with. There's a charity called Butterfly Conservation.
Yes.
There's a Bee Conservation Trust. And they've been able to give advice and support in taking things forward. And it's also important to be able to form those local partnerships, particularly with schools.
Yes.
One of the things that we have done between the Kampala buzz line and the Hackney buzz line is to twin up two schools. So there's a school called Kingsmead School in Hackney.
Yes.
And there's a school called New Brain School in Kawempe. And those two schools have now twinned up. Just this week, we've kicked it off with a gift exchange. Yes. So the children in the Hackney School made some beautiful butterfly masks.
Yes.
And I brought them over and gave them to the children in New Brain School. And they have also made some beautiful masks, beautiful butterfly shapes, and also some traditional banana fiber dolls as well. So I'm going to take them back and I'm going to give them to the children in Kingsmead in Hackney.
Yes. Now, the fact that now this has birthed also a collaboration between two schools, is there a particular reason as to why schools were zeroed in? Because sometimes people, the idea of choosing schools is that we are preparing for the future. We are fostering intergenerational conversations for urban sustainability, environmental conservation. Is there a particular reason as to why the schools were specifically chosen? Did it have to tie in with the fact that if we are going to save our environment, we have to start young and we start with the young people first?
I think that's certainly an element of it.
Yes.
When I ask adults, why are you interested in conservation or in nature? The answer almost always goes back to childhood. And they say, when I was a child, I used to live in nature. I used to go out and I don't know, talk to the birds or something like that. And children have this natural interest and empathy with nature. I think if you can engage children at a very young age, then that love for nature will stay with them.
Yes.
They don't have that contact with nature at an early age. I think it becomes more difficult as they get older. And as you have rightly said, you know, we are looking at a very uncertain future.
Yes.
We're facing climate changes, climate change issues. But we're also facing major issues of biodiversity loss around the world, really hope that the children of today can pick up this challenge and take it forwards. But to want to do that, they need to connect with nature in the first place.
Yes. So now, community participation. How is it to integrate the community into these activities? Because as you have shared, honestly speaking, Yes, young people are quite easier to mobilize compared to us adults. We tend to have other priorities we think of, and so it's easier to work with the younger population. But in any case, we can't get rid of the wider community. So how easy has it been for you to integrate the community? Like, if you're to compare and contrast the community in London, was it quite more receptive? And how did you find the community back here in Kampala?
It very much depends, I think. We, in order to deliver the Buzzline, we need to engage volunteers in this process. And sometimes it can be difficult to find those volunteers. Volunteers get engaged for different motivations.
Yes.
Sometimes it is young people who are looking for work and actually need to get some voluntary experience, yes, in order to do that. Sometimes it is older people like myself who have retired and want to give something back and have time on their hands. Sometimes it is parents who want to do things with their children.
Yes.
But you have to really give people what they want and go with their motivations. So to give you an example, at the moment we are creating a pollinator-friendly garden on one of the housing estates.
Yes.
But we're also doing that garden in memory of three women who lived on the estate who all passed away within a few months of each other, only through old age, not through any other reason. And they were known as the Golden Girls. But we've been able to engage their relatives, you know, their daughters and their sons and their granddaughters and their sons, who are making the garden in memory of the of their gran or of their mum. So it's important to look at what the motivations are. You know, like everywhere, some people are more into nature and some, yes, people are less so. I think one of the challenges that we have in London, mm, or in the UK is overcoming, if you like, a kind of certain aesthetic in terms of gardens and the way things should be. So people want things to be neat and tidy all the time, and they want to, so they pave over their gardens a lot, or they cut their grass yes, really short. Mm. And that's actually really, it means that the environment is really species poor. And in order to encourage pollinators and other wildlife, you have to let it grow a little bit wild, a little, yes, bit scruffy.
Yes, yes.
So we try and encourage people to leave a bit of space for nature and just, you know, leave their garden or part of their garden a little bit scruffy as well. But there's a change in the way that people are looking at things.
Yes. Now, I noticed that other than encouraging the Buzzline, Hackney Buzzline, Kampala Buzzline, you're into the space of extending environmental conservation, urban conservation, beyond the Buzzline to ensure that people actually integrate and live with nature through having green gardens, urban farming, also encouraging the expansion of green parks and green spaces, which is of course entirely with SDG 11, whose goal is to enhance green spaces and coexistence of nature and people. So basically, share your experience. Other than the Hackney Buzzline and Kampala Buzzline, what are some of those initiatives that you think urban communities can integrate within their day-to-day lives to ensure that they conserve nature and they coexist with nature, so that we don't make it seem like because you live in an urban place, you're supposed to be excused from nature conservation?
Yes, the Hackney Buzzline is one of many projects actually in London.
Yes.
So there's quite a movement to work with nature. For example, on the parks, most of the parks in London have a friends group of the parks. So there's quite a number of friends groups who are planting in yes, parks for nature, and they're planting trees and they're planting hedgerows and they're putting in ponds. So as I said, there's quite a number of initiatives like that. There's also a strong community garden movement in London. So people, many of whom might not have a private garden, will have a little patch of land where they can garden together. It's often, yes, revolves around food growing, so they can grow themselves some food as well. But because they're out there growing food. They have a kind of natural affinity to nature as well.
Yes.
And a lot of them want to know how can we make this more nature friendly as well, our garden. A lot of private householders who have their own back gardens also want to garden for nature as well. So that's quite well established
Yes. As
a movement in the UK, a kind of gardening for nature, gardening for wildlife
Yes. Movement.
The issue is that the advice that you get and the way it's looked at is very much about what it is that you can do in your own space. But actually, in order to help nature, certainly in an urban environment, you have to look across a wider geographical area, wider landscape. So people need to be thinking, how does my garden ecologically connect with someone else's garden?
Yes.
So to give you a practical example, a lot of people want to put in ponds into their garden.
Mm.
And a lot of people like frogs and they like nature coming in to do that. But if there's not another pond nearby, then the frogs have nowhere else to go to. So, you know, you get a small isolated, not even a population really, and they're going to die out. So you need to connect up all these different habitats together. And that's what we're trying to do. And that's the kind of new way of thinking now, is how do you connect things up together?
Okay. So for how many years has the Hackney Buzz Line existed?
It's only in its first year now.
It's in its first year.
But the it's had a kind of like a 10-year journey leading up to it.
Mm.
So I actually started, as I say, about 10 years ago, working on my local park. I set up a friends group for a local park. The idea really was to make that park better for people and better for nature. So, for example, we had a very old-fashioned 1970s playground that was full of hard surfaces and knee-grazing stuff and ugly metal things. And we transformed that into a much more natural, playable landscape for the children.
Green.
Yeah, with logs and boulders. Mm. And it's just more imaginative for the children to play there. And we also, the park has very harsh barriers, the entrances with iron railings and hedges. So we opened that out so that the park kind of just bled out onto the streets, merged onto the streets. And then as a result of that, we initiated a project down one street where we supported all the residents down that street to green up their street. We did many different activities. But for example, one of the things that we did is we all got together as a community and made window boxes. So we got some old scaffold boards and we screwed them together and we filled them with compost and we put flowers in and we gave them out to everyone down the street.
Wow.
Another thing that we did there, going back to your question about the links with the authorities.
Yes.
We were planting on the pavements. We got pavement trees and we'd plant flowers underneath them and seed onto the pavements. And the local authority came along and just sprayed herbicide all over the plants and just killed everything, which goes back to what I was saying about this kind of neat and tidy. People don't want to have plants growing on their street. So we persuaded the local authority to stop using glyphosate, to stop using herbicide on our streets. They were a bit nervous because they thought people would complain, but we'd built up this more nature-friendly community, so they were okay to pilot it.
Yes.
So they did do that. And then a year later, we asked an urban ecologist just to come and identify all the plants that were growing wild on the street, on the pavements. And she found over 60 different species of plants that people call weeds. And I just prefer to call them wildflowers
yes.
on the streets.
Now, Jerry, I get that here it's a story that involves the community. It also involves the authorities coming together, pulling together resources, pulling together all they have, all in the name of saving nature and creating more greener spaces.
Yeah.
Now, do you think if we made this conversation, because other than the aesthetic beauty and also the mere fact that it enhances our green and also improves the general livelihoods of people in the cities.
Yeah.
Do you think if we gave it a more health approach and we told people that it's not only for greening the environment, for its beauty and its natural decorative purposes, that also it's quite healthy and it improves your lifespan if you live in green, you're full of life, more imaginative, and also increases your lifespan? Because here in Kampala, at least most people notice that the lifespan of people who live further away from cities seems to be a bit longer than the people who live in the cities, because are affected by the fact that we have dealt away with our nature. Pollution is the order of that day. So do you think if we gave it a more health approach, we would achieve better results in enhancing urban conservation?
Yeah, that's a really important aspect of what we're doing. Probably term it as a well-being approach. Mm. So in London, a lot of European cities, indeed across Europe, there's a mounting problem of stress and anxiety and depression and isolation that people have. And there's growing evidence, a lot of evidence now, that shows that being out in nature improves your mood, improves your feeling of well-being. And, you know, essentially what we're doing is planting flowers. And so we're creating a flower corridor.
Yes.
And we're actually creating our buzz line along what, to use the jargon, is active travel routes. Yes. But it's basically places where people can walk and cycle. So it encourages people to get out, encourages people to get healthy, and it becomes a much more kind of tranquil, peaceful environment as well. Another really important part of what we're doing is, as you say, it's the social element.
Yes.
So by getting asking people to come out and volunteer and do that, and do these activities for nature, okay, they're helping nature, but what's also happening is they're coming out and they're talking to each other and they feel that they're doing something good and they're becoming proud of the community that they live in. So you get all these social benefits that arise from what we're doing as well.
Yes. Do you think that in the grander scheme of things, the mere fact that you've pioneered the Hackney Buzz Line back home in London, and also now we have the Kampala Buzz Line here in Uganda, Kampala, do you think we are going to ultimately achieve that balance between human development, human settlement, and also nature, urban nature conservation?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It is a balance. There's a concept in Europe of rewilding, which is just let things grow wild. That doesn't work in a city because we're not going to just let cities grow wild.
Yes.
What we're looking for is, if you like, what's the optimum, not the maximum, but what's the optimum biodiversity that you can have? What can you achieve with what you've got? And it can be very small. You know, it can be a small patch of flowers or a window box, or it can be a bigger green space. But there's always things that that you can do. I mentioned earlier that, you know, there's a lot of green space in London. A lot of it is on parks. But there's this real tendency to want to cut grass really short.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I've seen that here in Kampala as well. Whenever there's grass, it gets cut really short.
Yes, yes, yes.
One of the things that we've done on the Hackney Buzz Line is to create these wildflower meadows in parks, patches of wildflower meadows, which is actually just about letting the grass grow and adding some flowers into that. I did a survey last year comparing the insect diversity you get on these areas of long grass, wildflower meadows, to the mown grass, and there's something like 22 times more insect diversity in the wild grass and the wildflower meadows than there is in the mown grass.
Yes.
So, you know, one of the most impactful things that you can do to achieve quick results for nature is just by letting the grass grow long.
Yes. Now, for someone you're an ecologist who has been at the forefront of urban conservation for quite some time, what are some of those challenges that you look back to and you've experienced them not only in London, and I know you may also have experienced some challenges when you came to Kampala. What are some of those challenges that you've really experienced? Because I know it's really been hard to convince people to understand that you want your compound to be beautiful, but you also have to understand that nature has to coexist with you as well. Yes.
I think I'd point to two big challenges. I mean, the big one here in Kampala in London is development. So there's constant need to build more houses.
Yes.
And it's very hard to fight development because there's so much money behind it. But, you know, again, you have to look at what can you achieve within that context.
Yes.
The other challenge actually is maintenance. It seems a funny thing to say, but a lot of people get excited about making something. And funding, people will provide grants
to create nice
gardens, and then they'll come along and they'll smile, and you'll have a photo, and you'll have a photo opportunity, and then they go away again. But actually, you still need to maintain that space, and nobody wants to pay to do the maintenance.
Yes,
so it gets left to volunteers, and volunteers are great, but it can be quite a thankless task doing this day in, day out, and volunteers, and people have to work. So just keeping things in good, in good shape is a challenge.
Yes. Now that you mentioned maintenance, I've been meaning to ask, how do you maintain the buzz line to ensure that it, because I think the plan is to ensure that it exists in perpetuity, it exists for forever. So after it has been set up, how do you maintain it?
Yes, so one of the important considerations that we've had in developing the Hackney Buzz Line, and what it is a series of projects that we're delivering on particular spaces. So we're doing 5 projects a year, and we're working with bodies that want to maintain their spaces anyway. So you mentioned schools earlier. Another big advantage of working with schools is that they want to keep their grounds looking nice for the children, for the parents. So, they're happy to continue that maintenance. And really what we're doing is just saying, look, can you plant for pollinators here? You know, because not all flowers have the same value for pollinators. So it's selecting those plants, those flowers that are preferred by the species that we have got in the area. So first of all, you have to know what the species are. Then you have to know what plants they like. And then we put in the plants, and then we monitor the impact of that. So schools is one of them. The local authority manages parks. So they've got that maintenance. The housing associations also maintain their spaces. So we're trying to work with areas where there's that kind of maintenance is already inbuilt into it. What we haven't moved on to yet, but we want to, is to work with private householders, people with private gardens, to provide training for them on how they can make their gardens more pollinator friendly. And then again, they have their own interest in maintaining their garden to look nice.
Yes. Now, on the lighter side of things, actually, yesterday when I was reading something, I did come across the fact that bumblebees are quite a lot in London. And the Bumblebee Conservation Trust shared that its official in 2024 was the worst year for bumblebees since the records began. It found that they declined almost by a quarter, 22.5% across Great Britain. Wow. So I guess this feeds more into the fact that the Hackney Buzz Line is really doing quite some good work and heading right there.
It's really worrying. Yes. Insect diversity is declining on a massive scale across the globe.
Yes.
There was a study done in Germany 3 years ago, I think it was now, or a few years ago, and that found that the insect abundance had dropped by 3/4. They'd lost 3/4 of their insects. That's true across the whole of Western Europe. And it's estimated that globally, insect populations are declining by 2.5% a year. So if you take that forward 10 years, that's another 25% drop. You know, so we're at risk of kind of mass extinctions.
Yes.
Sometimes it's called the insect apocalypse. There's a phenomenon that we talk about which is called the windscreen splat effect. So when I was a child,
yes.
we used to drive through the countryside and your windscreen would be covered in insects. You'd
yes.
have to put your windscreen wipers on
yes.
in order to get rid of the insects
yes.
on
yes.
your windscreen. Last year, I drove about 100 miles through the countryside in summer, and there was not one insect on the windscreen. It is quite frightening, the decline in that. And you might say they're just insects, but you know, insects are at the basis of the food chain. So, you know, the birds feed on insects, the bat feeds on insects.
Yes, it's an
so
echo.
It goes all the way up through the food chain.
Yes. Now, what are the future plans of Hackney Buzzline? What are your future plans really to scale other buzz lines? Because I would like to believe that it's not only other than London, now it has come to Kampala. Do you have plans to scale in other countries or other parts of the UK as well, or even other parts of Uganda as well? What does the future look like?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Hackney itself, the Hackney Buzz Line itself, as I mentioned, we want to start engaging private residents to create more pollinator-friendly gardens so that we create more connectivity between them. And we are looking to develop an app that people can use that will encourage them to do that.
Yes.
So that will show that when they've done something in their garden, how that connects with what's happening around them. So how it expands ecological networks, but also the social networks as well. It's going to be really interesting
yes.
To see how things develop in Kampala.
Yes.
We need to have further discussions with Marafiki. But the vision is really, if it can be done in London, it can be done in Kampala.
It can be done
anywhere
yes,
in the world,
yes,
you
yes,
know.
Yes, yes, yes.
And hope we can roll out our model to other cities where there is the interest. But I want to go back to where I started at the beginning, is that I want this to come from the communities themselves,
yes.
not to go into a country or another area and say, we're going to do this to you. But
yes,
this is what we want.
The community must
yeah.
be leading the charge.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
And they must want it.
Yeah. Yes. So, Jerry, as someone who is quite passionate about urban conservation and promoting the ecosystems within the urban setting, and also the mere fact that communities play a crucial role in this, what is that one thing that you would share with someone who is quite skeptical, or they do feel that the role of urban environment conservation should be fulfilled by someone else and not them? What is that one statement that you would believe you would share with them and you feel that it would convince them, or at least make them contemplate to understand the need to preserve the environment and their ecosystem, or their green as well?
My statement is, nature is all around you. Go out and look and connect with the nature that there is around you.
Yes.
There's a lot of there's growing research now that shows that there's a journey that people go on, where first of all you start observing nature, and then when you observe nature, you start wanting to help nature. And when you want to help nature, you start doing things, and then you become more passionate about it, and then you want to encourage other people to do things
yes.
as well, and then start lobbying and campaigning for that.
Yes.
But the first step is to look.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
It's been a great conversation. Hope to see you around in Kampala and next time when you come for bigger and better things. Yes. Now, to our viewers and our listeners out there, I've been with Jerry. We've been discussing transforming communities through urban environment conservation. And there is one thing I have picked, is that if you are going to conserve nature, look around you first, connect with it, but also understand that you are part of a bigger community that needs to protect the environment, to protect the green space, because it starts with you. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel. Look out for more exciting conversations where we talk about environmental sustainability, environmental conservation, climate change. I've been your host, Grace, driving eco-sustainability, my perspective. Till next time. Thank you so much for watching this video. I do value the time that you put in to watch every episode. The entire essence I started this channel was to enhance the reach of the voices of those people who are contributing to the fight against climate change and those who are fighting to save our environment. If you like this video, click the subscribe button so that you can equally contribute to enhancing awareness towards climate action. Let's save our planet together.